The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello and welcome to our program, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Deeds on Bread for the Journey Radio. This morning I'll be interviewing Kelvin Potts, founder of a program in Oakland, California called Teen Boys Rites of Passage. Kelvin's early life was one of violence and self-destruction, and somehow Kelvin found his way out of it. As an adult man, he looked around his community and saw how many young boys are subjected to violence and negative lifestyles. That and his own good fortune inspired him to create a place where these young boys can share their life stories, their feelings, and their struggles. Through mentoring, they begin to make choices that lead to a more sustainable and fulfilling life. We met Kelvin because our chapter in Oakland, California, Bread for the Journey of Oakland, had given him a grant. And we had a retreat a few weeks ago in which we brought in some of the people that we'd given grants to meet some of the donors and supporters of Bread for the Journey. And our leader in that chapter, Victoria Masisa, brought Kelvin Potts. Well, in, as he told his story, we all fell in love with him. And so I thought I'd bring him on the show so that you could do the same. But before we begin, I'd like to share a little bit with you about what Bread for the Journey is and why we have a radio show. You know, Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization that started in 1988. And what we do is we open chapters of Bread for the Journey in cities all around the country. Currently, we have 20 of them and perhaps six more in the making. And what these chapters do, they're run by volunteers, and they raise money locally in their community by pooling it just from friends and families in a very casual way, friends, family, colleagues. They pool that money together, and then they find people in the community who are working to make the community better, people like Kelvin Potts and some of the others I've interviewed in previous shows. And we basically, with a little bit of support, say to them, we believe in you. We believe in what you're doing, and we want to support what you're doing. And we give that money away. They're small micro grants. Sometimes it's $250, sometimes it's $1,000, sometimes it's $2,000. But we give it away with really no real strings attached. Sometimes we give them a grant right there on the spot at the time that we meet with them. And when we do meet with them, it's not around long grant proposals and a lot of paperwork. It's really just meeting over a cup of tea and hearing verbally what it is they're doing in the community. And as I said, coming back to them and saying, I believe in you. And so because we've been doing this since 1988, we've met thousands of people who are good people, people who are doing things that make their community better. People like Kelvin who experienced something in their life and then found their way out of it, experienced something difficult and found their way out of it. And then when they did, turned around and wanted to give something back, moving forward, sort of paying it forward. So we just thought, you know what, it's time to let the rest of the world see the people and meet the people that we have met in this incredible work we've had an opportunity to do. So the radio show gives us an opportunity to highlight people like Kelvin and others we've given grants to. And we hope it's meaningful to you. So with that, I would like to introduce our guest. Kelvin, thank you for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you, Mariana, for extending, you know, the honor and the privilege for me to be a part of your radio show.
I really feel
it's a privilege for me. You know, like you said, I haven't always been the guy I am today. So it's a real privilege to be alive and breathing and able to do what I do with the youth and the community.
Yeah. So why don't you, well, since we've sort of touched on that in the beginning, why don't you tell us a little bit about perhaps your history, Kelvin?
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Well, I was, you know, born and raised in East Oakland. Most of my life I lived in East Oakland. I was a guy who came up in a single parent home. You know, my father wasn't around. I didn't meet my father until I was 15 years old. So probably a lot of the guys in my neighborhood had similar backgrounds, so it wasn't foreign to me to not see a man in the house. So it was pretty regular. You know, I ended up leaving high school and going into college and picking up some habits and some self-destructive ways of just orchestrating my life. You know, I did what the guys around me did. I gravitated toward guys who, you know, were self-destructive and used drugs and used violent means to kind of suppress some of our feelings. You know, we just decided we were going to go out and, you know, take havoc into the world.
You know?
That was just the way we did it. You know, it wasn't like 24/7, you know, all the time, but there were times when we would go out and just be destructive, you know, and the drug use and stuff like that. So it was just what we did, you know. And so that kind of carried on into my adult life. You know, I was able to, you know, to maintain a job most of the time, you know, if not all the time, but I was, I worked. Established a career for myself, but I continued some of the self-destructive ways until, you know, into my adult life. And once I decided to make a shift or for that to change, it wasn't like at the end, I really didn't enjoy that lifestyle anymore. That lifestyle just didn't work for me anymore. It was gotten to a point where I wasn't enjoying it. And it was just, I was doing it out of habit. And I had to make a change. And then when the change came, I decided that I wanted to give back to the community and try to help other young men offset some of their destructive ways so they wouldn't have to face some of the things that I faced. You know, a lot of times it was a situation where I could have lost my life. So it wasn't a pretty picture. It wasn't nice at all. I don't like really doing a lot of graphic conversation about it because it's,
I understand,
a past. It's my past, and I kind of want to leave it there.
Kelvin, why don't you tell us a little bit about the very beginnings of teen rites of passage? What I understand in a big way what inspired you was your own life and surviving, but perhaps you can give us a little bit of detail about that time in your life and what sort of thing happened that actually helped you to take action.
Okay. Well, I've been asked that question on several occasions, and I had to really dig deep and think about the origin of the rites of passage concept, you know, consciousness. You know, when I was aware of the idea came into my consciousness. And what I want to say is, in the very beginning of my transformation into healthy lifestyles, when I put the drugs down and the violence and the negative thinking, kind of put it aside and wanted to have a better life, we formed a men's group. And our men's group came together and we began to heal and talk about the things that we had talked about before, start to, you know, heal some of the pain and some of the things of our past that created blocks from us being fully expressing and fully who we were. And that idea of men coming together and the healing energy that happens in that group was pretty much the inspiration for the boys group. When the conversation came about a mentoring program through East Bay Church, my idea was we could do the same thing that we've done, the heal and work through our stuff with the boys. We could bring them mm-hmm. together at an earlier age so they begin to dialogue and begin to free up some of the pain and some of the, you know, the ill feelings and whatever's going on with them, and give them a different way of looking at how they are orchestrating their lives through this group process, as well as, you know, field trips and things like that. So, yeah, that was kind of like the idea.
So what ages, so today here you are, this program, and tell us a little bit about the teens that you serve. What ages are they? What age range?
We typically have served boys from 12 to 16.
And how do they find out about you, Kelvin?
Well, we actually we promoted our program through some of this, you know, the middle school systems, high schools, went to high school principals, and a couple of times I went into classrooms and spoke to the young men that were in the classrooms, as well as from the pulpit of East Bay Church, and encouraged, you know, the congregants to send their young men or their, you know, their nephews or their grandsons or whoever, you know, they may want to have involved in our program. But we just had a multitude of different approaches to gathering the boys.
And so tell us about what it is that you do with them, some of the activities.
Okay. Well, I want to back up a little bit, and I want to give a definition of rites of passage. Because rites of passage, the word rites means a celebration. And passage means that you have decided to have a different consciousness about how you are living your life. You've made a decision that this particular way of approaching a situation isn't the healthiest way, and you've made a decision to do something different. So you've made a passage into a higher consciousness of how you approach things. So the whole concept of rites of passage is to bring boys into a program and offer them tools and techniques to transcend some of the difficulties in their life. And, you know, just to break it down, you know, you may have a young man may be having a difficult time relating to a teacher or relating to his parents. So we'll give him a different approach. So maybe try this a couple of times. And then come back and tell us if that worked for you or not, you know. And the beauty of the Rites of Passage program, once the boys begin to develop relationships, they start, we call it checking each other. They'll start finding out if the boys are in our group as they go into the world, are you really doing the things that you're talking about that are causing you difficulty? We've given you a suggestion to do a different way. Are you really doing that? So the group will hold you accountable. Mm-hmm. So these different ways, there really is a decision that the boys have to make themselves. So we encourage them to try something different.
Can you introduce us in a way, not to bring a kid onto the line, but I don't mean that, but I mean by telling us a story. Do you have a story, perhaps, that you can tell us about just what you're talking about?
Okay. Here's one story. There was a young man who, really gifted, smart guy, who decided he wants to smoke weed. You know, and he would come to the group and talk about his weed smoking, and he felt like it wasn't a big deal. You know, so, of course, we as the adults are going to discourage him from doing it, of course. But what happened in that particular group is the young men in the group started discouraging him and really, you know, using their language to talk to him about weed smoking. You know, they used their language. And I believe that their language had more of an effect on him than ours. Mm-hmm. So when he would return to the group, we met once a week. When he would return to the group, the other young men in the group would ask him during the check-in, so what's up, man? You still smoking? You know, they would use their language to try to check him on his weed smoking. Now, the teacher went through that maybe for 2 or 3 weeks, and finally he made the decision he was going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And him stopping was, it was really, I think it was really based on the other young men just letting him know it wasn't cool. You know, so by the end of our sessions, you know, our sessions go for 12 weeks, the young man like had like 60 days clean, and he was a different guy. He had his conversation and his presence was completely different when he was in the group. You know, he was really a really model of what can happen.
So, Kelvin, it sounds like the whole trajectory of that young man's life was changed. You know, we have no idea what his future is going to hold, but that's a really major turning point, you know, for many people to stop. And oftentimes those people don't stop at that point. They go on, they get involved in drugs and, you know, all kinds of things, negative things happen. And then if they're lucky enough to get off of drugs, at some point they'll reflect back on those beginning decisions. And it sounds like through teens' rites of passage actually intervened at the most appropriate time. And it was kids helping kids. That is one of the most powerful aspects of this work. And I'm impressed. To our listening audience, we're going to take a break and come back in just a moment. Stay with us and let's hear more about Kelvin Potts and teens' rites of passage.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
If you are looking for both an inside and insightful look at what you're not seeing in media coverage of today's legal, business, and policy battles, tune into In the Court of Public Opinion with host Jim Haggerty. What happens in the public arena affects us all. Whether you're following the latest high-profile court case, corporate crisis, or are just interested in government and policy, be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. The witnesses are ready and the jury seated. So join us for our next session in the Court of Public Opinion.
9 different energy systems make up the energy body. Energy is all around us and connects us. Energy exerts a major control over our biology and is a big reason why you should be tuning in to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with your host, Dr. Ann Deatley. We'll explore energy balance techniques, tips, and patterns to keep your flow of energy optimal to maintain maximal health. By adopting these techniques, you will keep your energy body and physical body in harmony. Listen for Energy Medicine and Optimal Health, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking to Kelvin Potts, who is the founder of a program called Teens Rites of Passage that is working with young boys, teen boys, actually, in sort of making a shift in their lives, giving them a place where they can talk about their feelings, share their own life stories, and begin the process of self-reflection. And so when we've been talking to Kelvin, we were talking about an example where the boys are actually helping their own peers. So tell us a little bit about how that works. You did in this one example. Any other stories that you might be able to share with us about this?
Well, Yeah, there's a lot of stories about how the boys, we call it pull-ups. You know, you get an opportunity to check another young man and make sure that he's honoring the group, and he's mm-hmm. doing things that we feel can help his life improve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a multitude of stories. You know, there was a young man who, you know, was in a situation where it had become very violent in his immediate neighborhood, and he shared about the violence in his immediate neighborhood, and we encouraged him to maybe take a look at, you know, just walking away and not having to respond in the way that most of the guys in the neighborhood respond.
You mean physically just leaving the scene and going home or going somewhere else?
Yeah. Right. And not being in a position not to defend yourself, but in a position to be able to stand strong and then walk away and take the higher role, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of times in certain neighborhoods and certain environments and certain cultures, you know, there's names for people who walk away. And they call them different names, you know, and we have to encourage
them. Negative pejorative names.
Oh, yeah, like, you know, punk, sissy, you know, whatever. They got all these names. You know, there is names that I grew up hearing those names. You know, those people talk about people who don't want to fight or don't want to be aggressive and, you know, don't want to stand up and, you know, and hurt somebody.
Right.
Yeah, but we have to encourage him to look at the long-range picture, because in today's youth, they don't stop with fighting nowadays. Now they pick up guns and people get killed.
Right.
So we were able to encourage him to move out of that neighborhood and go stay somewhere else. You know, that's sometimes is necessary.
That takes a lot. I can imagine that takes a lot. All these peers, all these people your own age, the cool kids or whatever, are calling you names as you walk away, and it takes a tremendous amount of courage. And what it sounds like you're doing with Teens Rites of Passage is replacing those kids with other kids who are going to say, yeah, you go for it.
Absolutely. You know, Mariana, it's I want to share this part because it's really amazing that when we get, you know, we have graduation ceremony for the young men, and they come up on stage and they wear their suits and ties and they get nice plaques and awards, and they get a chance to, some of them, you know, are encouraged to, you know, tell what their experience was with the Rites of Passage program.
Right.
And when we are close to that graduation piece, we're actually, you know, doing some practicing. You know, we have a luncheon prior to the graduation.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone really wants to see, if anybody really wants to see the richness of a Rites of Passage program, that luncheon is the place that you want to see it. That's when the boys start to talk about their experience with the program, right? They start talking about it. You can see it in their eyes. You can feel it. You could feel it when they start talking. It's a feeling thing. There was one young man, I want to talk about this story. There was one young man who was a troublemaker the whole 12 weeks. Not a major troublemaker where I would put him out of the program, but he was always defiant. He was a good kid, but he had a habit of being defiant and somewhat disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a good kid, and I knew he had picked that habit up, and it was hard for him to break that. Mariana, at the last 2 weeks of the program, he became a leader. What happened was we started rehearsing the graduation ceremonies, and he started giving the other young men who were rehearsing instructions on how to present themselves. It was an amazing thing to see because he was right on cue. I mean, he was telling those boys how to articulate their success as well as his own success. He kind of took over. You know? It was just an amazing thing to see this young man named Quasay show his leadership capacity in that arena. In all this time, he had kind of like been a little knucklehead and giving us a little problems here and there. But during that preparing for graduation, his light started to shine.
Isn't that interesting?
Who he is and who he was began to blossom. And it was just an amazing experience to see that young man, you know, come forth like that. It was really amazing experience.
Well, he had been watching. You know, I can understand this. You know that he'd been watching for all these weeks and hanging on to a kind of way of being that wasn't serving him, and examining that against what he was seeing as perhaps something that was a more fulfilling way to live. And then there's a real power in the ritual. You talked about rites of passage, the word rites being ritual or ceremony or celebration. And there's a lot of power in the kinds of things that happen. And even the word graduation, you know, graduating to the next stage. And it sounds like all the thinking that had been going on throughout the entire time that he was working with you kind of took form suddenly as he was preparing for that graduation ceremony.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's different times when the boys, you know, even now, there's a couple of boys that I mentor, and we still have some of the graduates from our earlier programs that we take them on field trips and do programs, we do workshops with. And sometimes, you know, it takes a while for a young man to really feel comfortable and trusting enough to really show up, you know, with his authentic, who he is, underneath all the stuff he's learned to hide behind. You understand what I'm saying? There's a lot of stuff that we learn, even, you know, adults, you know, kids start learning methods and means of hiding. And sometimes it takes a while for them to unmask and reveal, so that you can even become more vulnerable and closer to them, so you can really affect and be connected to who they are. And sometimes everybody has their own season for that. They have their own time span. You know, so it's an interesting process to watch.
Right. So when once a person graduates, can they never come back, or do they? Are there different levels of work that they're doing, or? And how long does it take to get to that graduation stage?
Okay. Well, the way we set it up and the way we're still working to develop some of the ways and means of making and of maintaining this process with the boys, we have a 12-week process, which is every Saturday for 12 weeks. We do workshops and we do field trips and stuff like that. Once the graduation ceremony is complete, we have an aftercare program. The aftercare program, which usually meets like twice a month, we do workshops and field trips and kind of just keep in touch with the boys, you know. And we also like have guys that will mentor them one-on-one mentoring. So we've done some of that too. Some of the stuff we're still kind of working out some of the kinks. But we do have a series of workshops and field trips for the boys who have graduated.
Right. I had an interview last week with a woman who created a program that uses teen volunteers. It was a really rich program, and you might want to listen to it, and other listeners might. It's a program called the Ceres Community Project, in which they have a large industrial kitchen, and they teach young teenagers how to prepare locally grown, organic, healthy foods, and they package these prepackaged meals and deliver them to people who are dealing with life-threatening serious illnesses. Wow. And so we were talking, I know, and the teens are volunteering in this program, and we were talking about it, and I said something like, you know, and then these kids are learning, you know, how to cook and some important life skills. And she said, that's the least of it. She said, what's really happening is we're awakening the heart of compassion in these young teenagers. We're giving them a purpose and a reason and a place in the community that they step into that helps them to know that their community needs them and that they are part of this community. And as you were talking about the boys, and this might be, you know, something that you've thought about, some, you know, sort of development into a service learning way of, you know, some kind of work in which they can then not just improve themselves through the work that you're doing, but then go on and serve humanity, serve others, move from me to we, in a sense.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that?
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think that's a very nice approach. Yeah, I thought about that, you know. Our program is really concentrating on life skills.
Right.
And
right.
the emotional development, the, you know, mental development.
Right.
And giving the boys a place to, you know, look at some ways that they're operating and see if they could maybe do it in a different way. So,
right.
You know,
and we can't be everything to everybody. I wasn't implying that. But perhaps there's a way to a way to collaborate with another organization that's doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea, Maria. I think it's a great idea because we actually are looking to place boys in an environment, a continued healing environment, so they can continue to just grow and embrace the things that they've decided to be a part of. I think it's really important skills. When I was coming up, I don't remember seeing these kind of programs in my neighborhood. I never remember anybody coming around saying, do you want to go to a Rites of Passage program? Or, I don't remember seeing any of that. So it's really an honor to be a part of something like this. So.
Yeah, to create and be a part of it. And the world thanks you for this work. How many mentors do you have in your program? And what's the kind of ratio between mentors and teens, Kelvin?
Well, that's a good question. When we generally go into our sessions, we have we want to have two adult men as the lead facilitators, Mariana. And the reason, and we want to have a consistency of those two guys being there for the whole 12 weeks because it creates stability and it creates a safety place, safety for the young men. And they want to, eventually you want to try to pull on some of the vulnerable issues that they may be dealing with, and they'll feel comfortable if the same guys are showing up. But we also expose them to a variety of, you know, being in the community, like, you know, professors of African-American studies, professors of, you know, firemen, policemen, just different professionals who may want to come in and reach out and volunteer to be with the boys. So we're open to a lot of different exposure, but we definitely want to be consistent with the main characters, you know, because you want to connect with the young men. You want to have guys that are there that remember their names. You want to kind of know their, you know, at times you may want to even want to know who their parents are and what their life, what their home lifestyle is about, so you can be more effective. You know,
I think developing trust is huge. I think it's one of the, I mean, I remember my own life as a young person, you know, if I didn't trust an adult person, I wasn't going to share anything about who I was with them. And it takes time to build and develop that trust. And I was just speaking with an executive director of a program here in Marin County called Ambassadors of Hope, where she's working with homeless teens. 10% of the teens in Marin County are homeless. I was sort of blown away by that statistic. And she's got a sort of in-depth kind of training program that actually has the kids participating in some function, training the people who agree to mentor. So she's really particular about who, you have to go through a whole training program in order to actually be a mentor to a teen in this program. So I really get it that we pick our mentors well and we train them and we want to develop a kind of trust to develop between the teens and those mentors.
Absolutely.
And
That's the most important. I mean, there's been some lessons learned along the way, Mariana. You know, I learned some lessons the hard way. you want to bring in people who are skilled at, you know, facilitating groups. And just because a person may have a degree or a license or something, doesn't necessarily mean that they have that skill level. You know, I've learned
some lessons the hard way.
So we kind of bring guys in slowly and see what the vibe is, because, you know, it's a vibrational thing. It's like, you know, the boy say, I ain't feeling him.
Right. I get it. We've got to take another break. So to our listeners, stay with us. We're talking to Kelvin Potts, Teens Rites of Passage. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
A divorce can break your heart, but it doesn't have to break the bank or ruin your life. Join Lori Grover for A Divorce You Can Live With and discover the benefits divorce mediation offers over aggressive dueling attorneys. Lori and her guests will show you how you can make your divorce faster, healthier, and much less expensive. She'll also be sharing the ways she helps couples settle money and parenting issues fairly, and the pitfalls of using the legal system to wage financial and emotional war. A Divorce You Can Live With airs live every Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Do you find yourself tearing pictures of rooms out of magazines? Do you watch certain movies and TV programs because of the homes they show? Are Sundays reserved for open houses? Then you are a home dreamer, and someday you will build or renovate your dream home. Steve Klipp has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. His show, Winning the Dream Home Race, can be heard every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Let Steve Klipp help save you money and make you a winner.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
So, Kelvin, one of my favorite, I'm loving this interview, and one of my favorite parts is hearing some of the stories that you have to tell. So I'm going to invite you one more time to tell a story about some of the kids in your program.
Okay. Well, there is one story that I think was really huge, very huge and very moving. And it's even difficult to talk about, you know, sometimes, because I recall the story and my emotions start to turn as a result of just me remembering how profound this particular story is. And there's a film that we show from time to time, and the film's entitled Daddy Hunger, and it talks about, you know, the absence of a father in homes and how devastating it is. And it's pretty pretty moving film, and we showed it to the young men one Saturday. And this one particular young man, when he, as the film progressed, I saw him withdraw and kind of slide his chair into a corner and became very sad. You know, and at the end of the film, you know, after the session was over, I pulled him to the side and said, "What's up, man? Because, you know, you're looking really sad." And he started, you know, kind of like pouring out his heart about his kid's relationship with his father wasn't anywhere close to where he would like for it to be. In other words, he was just telling me that he doesn't see his father, you know, barely sees him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly the young man was in pain. Clearly, he was, you know, close to tears. So, you know, I asked him, did he know where his dad was? He said, yeah. He said, I know where he is. He said, and he just automatically just said, you want his phone number? I said, yeah, I'll take his number and I'll call him. He said, yeah, call my daddy. I said, okay. So I took his number, and the dad's name was Nate. And I called him a couple times, no response. One time I called and he answered the phone. And this was close to graduation. And so I told Nate that I was leading a program and his son was in, and that his son was about to graduate, and it'd be really good if he could, you know, come to the graduation and see his son graduate. So we have a graduation ceremony, and, you know, it's in a room where it's at church, and the congregants are all seated, and the boys are lining up at the back of the church by the wall, preparing to come down the aisle for the graduation ceremony. And I see a man walking who I hadn't seen before, and something told me that this was Nate. And I said, "Hey, are you Nate?" And she turned around and said, "Yes." And the young man was just start smiling. He was just really happy that his father was there. He had a smile on his face. It just would not quit. He was so enthused and so happy during that whole ceremony that it was just really a really nice thing to see. I'll just put it like that. Mm-hmm. And as a result of Nate coming to the graduation, Nate and his son are in a relationship now. They see each other all the time. And they have reestablished their relationship. So his father's in this young man's life, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. So that's kind of like the story that happened. That was a major, major thing. I mean, that's what we want. That's kind of like the results we want to see. Those are the kind of stories we want to have as, you know, like this is what happens from time to time when we engage our youth and engage their parents to be a part of what they're doing in their lives. So, a powerful story.
And Nate, it sounds like what Nate really needed was someone to reach out to him and invite him in.
Absolutely.
And you provided that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Mariana, let me speak on that for a minute, just for 1 second. Sometimes, and I've done it too, men get caught up in whatever they're caught up in the world. And then nobody intentionally wants to inflict pain, emotional pain on a child. Mm-hmm. But sometimes men have to we have to pull them and say, "Look, man, you know, this is where we need you to be right now. You know, this is what needs to happen for this young man." And maybe, you know, as a mentor and a role model, we can orchestrate or show by example the things that are needed for our youth in the community. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, a lot of guys are out there, they're not intentionally just being, you know, inflicting pain and abandonment issues on their youth. They're just caught up in some other stuff.
Did you have to convince Nate, or was it easy to get him to come to the graduation ceremony?
Well, I didn't use any kind of sales pitch or anything really profound. I just spoke man to man. Mm-hmm. I said, "I've been working with your son, and he's graduating, and I think it'd be a really good idea if you came." Clearly, Mariana, this is what I know about fathers and sons. Generally, the father and the son want the same thing. They want to be close. But at some point, sometimes an intervention helps. And sometimes when a man sees another man standing in that particular position, it's attractive, and he'll want to model that also. So I don't know. I'm just glad the guy came. I'm glad that he decided he wants to be with his son. So,
If someone wants to be part of your program or to support your program, in some way, perhaps they want to make a contribution, perhaps they want to volunteer, perhaps they know a kid who really could be part of your program and would benefit. How do they reach you, Kelvin?
Well, I have an email address, and I have a phone number. Email me or phone me, and we could make it happen.
Do you feel like you want us to do that on the air or not? I mean, one or the other?
Oh, yeah, on the air. Yeah, my cell phone number is 510-917-1505. And my email is kppotts@aol.com.
That's right. That's Kelvin, PP as in Peter, PPOTTS and Tom S. So what keeps you going, Kelvin, when you feel discouraged?
That's a really good question, Marianne. That's a really good question. And a lot of times it's hard for me to answer questions without having a story behind the question. But what I've discovered is self-discovery. You know, I'm really into continually to discover and dig into my own stuff and figure out what makes me tick and what makes me feel alive. Mm-hmm. And what I found out is that I have a lot of compassion and I have a lot of energy where I want to give, you know. And without giving, I'm not feeling as fulfilled as I do when I give. You know, because I've had periods of time when I wasn't giving, when I was just pretty much, you know, I have another profession. I was making a lot of money and going to the bank, but I wasn't happy. I wasn't feeling like my life made that much sense. And in fact, I recall really kind of feeling somewhat depressed, somewhat just down. And I need to be inspired, you know. And then as a result of getting more involved in helping with the youth and doing the work, that kind of work, I just felt more alive. It just does something to me that it makes me feel like life is worth living, so to speak.
Right.
You know,
it's that yesterday, thing I was talking about with the teens, the awakening the heart.
Oh, we got to go?
No. Go ahead.
Okay. Yesterday, I was hanging out with two of the guys were graduates, and one of the guys was just their friend, and we kind of spent the day together yesterday. And it just feels good to be in a guy that just feels good. It's almost like returning to childhood. You know, mm-hmm. you're around these youth, and there's an energy about them that draws me into being a part of what they're doing at the level that they're doing it. I don't know if I'm explaining that right. It's almost like there's a part of me who's still a real child, and that child wants to have fun and play. And when I'm around these young men, I mean, I'm still a man, and I'm still demand respect, and I still have, you know, a certain way that they need to show up. But there's a part of me who can get right into that child energy and play. And I think that's really a healthy place for me. It may sound selfish, but it's a healthy place for me. And I think it's also a healthy place for them to have someone to connect with them at that level. But that provides them a sense of freedom and expression that's different than they would have with an adult who may be, you know, very rigid, very structured, and very like, you're the child and I'm the parent. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, there needs to be a connection. And I think that is what draws me to continue to do this work. I feel like I connect with the young men really well.
It sounds to me like you're the very perfect person to be doing this job, Kelvin.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. So how do you know when you've succeeded in really helping a kid?
That is also a really good question. That's kind of a hard one to answer, Marianne, but I think that when I'm able to connect with a young man and they're actually able to, you know, share with another adult or with someone else our relationship and how it has affected their lives, that's when I know I've really made an impact. Mm-hmm. When I can see one of the young men go up to a microphone and talk about his life and the change that have happened based on the relationship with the Rites of Passage program without any coaching, that's when I've known that there's something has happened here. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that happen on several occasions. I've seen these mm-hmm. young men come forward and speak to congregants or speak to on a microphone about the impact of these types of relationships on their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be really fulfilling work for you. And I imagine there's just something that clicks inside when you know you've made a difference. It's really a felt experience inside of you. And part of it is getting to know who that kid is. And,
oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's lots of examples when you know you're impacting a young man's life. There's a couple of guys that I make sure that I try my best to get to their, you know, they're involved in athletics. They play football and baseball and run track and basketball. You know, I try my best to at least come to one or two of their games.
Mm-hmm.
When I show up there, they're just all smiles and they're running mm-hmm. up to me. They're like, help me. I mean, it's clear that they're really appreciating me being in their lives, and that's when I feel like I've really made an impact. When I'm able to look in their eyes and look me in the eyes, and there's just this glow and this happiness that shows up, and it's real genuine. You know, young men, it's like, you know, they're really happy, you know, that they have some people in their lives who care about what they're doing.
Yeah, and you know, you often hear people who are successful when they're on television talking about their young life and what made them go into the field of work that they went into, or help them change their ways if they were kids in trouble. And often they'll point to one person, a teacher, a mentor, somebody who really helped them to get out of whatever they were into and into a new direction in their life. And it sounds to me like, I don't know, 20 years from now, when these kids look back and say, who was it that made the difference? They'll be pointing to Kelvin Potts. And I'm honored to have you on this show and for you to, and to actually consider you a friend, Kelvin.
Well, thank you, Maria. That's nice to hear.
Thank you. So, to our listening audience, and, if you want to reach out to Kelvin in any way regarding his program, I'm going to let him give you his phone number one more time. Go ahead, Kelvin.
My phone number is area code 510-917-1505.
And I, for one, would like to be invited to one of those graduation ceremonies, if you wouldn't mind keeping me on your list.
Absolutely, absolutely. You will definitely have an invitation to the next graduation ceremony.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, those ceremonies are pretty powerful.
I want to be there.
Yeah, you'll be amazed. You know, you try to explain to the boys, you know, what it's going to look, what it's going to feel like, and what it's going to look like, and they don't get it until they're in the midst of it. And when they're in the midst of it, it's like, wow, they're very thankful and very grateful for it, to be a part of it.
And I'm very thankful and very grateful for you, and teens' rites of passage and the work that you're doing. So to our listening audience, this is the end of this week's show. Please join us next week. And as you all know, Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization that could use your support. If you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, or if you'd like to start a chapter of Bread for the Journey in your town, you'll get to meet people like Kelvin in your community. They're everywhere, I promise you. Please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. I believe that if we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And I close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. I'll see you next week.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.